Hey, Redfern listeners. This is your host, Amy Mayer, and I'm checking in with you. It's middle of summer, and I hope you're doing lots of reading. I know I sure am, and I'm working on our fall lineup or my fall lineup as we speak. But in the meantime, I wanted to offer up a different kind of podcast I'd like to share with you. I recently had the opportunity to be a guest on a podcast, and that podcast is the Tall Mike Wine Podcast, and he is sort of my equivalent, but in the wine world. And we ran into each other. I was on vacation about a year ago in Sonoma, and he works at Nicholson Ranch, which is a great winery if you're in the area. And we got to talking and thought there might be a way for us to collaborate. So I just went on his podcast and gave a mini summer reading list. And at the same time, we paired the books with wine and talked about all things wine. And I learned also to work on my wine adjectives. So I think I've got floral down and a couple of other things. So you'll have to listen in. But Tall Mike is the real deal. He is very serious about his wine, but doesn't take himself too seriously. So I think that's a really good combo. And he's a former disc jockey. So I think he has a wonderful voice that you'll enjoy. So please check him out. And I will talk to you soon. And I will be back in the fall with more episodes. Okay, talk to you later. Bye.
Coming up on the Tall Mike Wine Podcast.
Hi, Tall Mike. How's it going?
You don't have to call me Tall Mike if you don't want to.
Okay.
But you would be amazed at how many people just call me that when they meet me in person.
I have to add, she is Canadian. I wanted to throw that out
no,
there.
No, Canada.
I put ice in my wine.
It might offend some people, but it does not offend me.
But I chose books because it's something that I know, because I wanted it to seem authentic.
What was your second choice?
Oh, God. It would probably be knitting, and you would not be.
And now, the Tall Mike Wine Podcast.
The cell phones have been silenced. The wine is poured. And just like that, the podcast begins. It's the Tall Mike Wine Podcast, the wine podcast that's not all about wine. All about wine can be boring, and who can sit still for that? The Wine Podcast, heard in 65 countries on 6 continents and in 48 of these United States. From Conneaut, Ohio to Detroit Lakes, Minnesota, from Rawlins, Wyoming to Paulsboro, Washington, where they make that Paulsboro bread. The bread whose recipe was inspired by the Bible. Pretty crazy, Paulsboro. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Mike Stone, your host and eponymous tall wine guy. I work at a winery in Sonoma, California, and for more than half my life, I've been really into wine. And I like to share the fun part with conversation. If you enjoy these conversations, scroll up and down and through the older episodes and get yourself caught up. Also, I'll nag you again about leaving a rating and a review on Apple Podcasts. And be sure you're subscribed on whatever app it is you're using so you don't miss an episode. They tell me it helps a lot. Let's get to the conversation. It's episode 42, and my guest is a podcast host. She's also Canadian. Her podcast is not a wine podcast, but a podcast that focuses on books. We met when she and some friends visited Nicholson Ranch, so she has wine cred. Speaking to us via Zoom from Vancouver, BC, the host of the Redfern Book Review Podcast, Amy Mayer. Hello, Amy.
Hi, Tall Mike. How's it going? I'm so happy to be here.
I'm doing great. I'm doing well. You don't have to call me Tall Mike if you don't want to.
Okay.
But you would be amazed at how many people just call me that when they meet me in person because I'm tall. It's weird. How long ago were you in Sonoma? It seems like a while back to me.
It was last spring, and I was on a girls' trip for a big milestone birthday for me. And I remember we had this great picnic at Nicholson Ranch, and then we moved over for wine tasting, and that's where I met you.
Yes, it has happened a few times, less than a handful, where somebody I work with says, hey, there's a fellow podcaster in that group over there. You should go say hi. Or I'll be hosting someone and I'll mention the podcast and they'll be like, oh, I have a podcast. So here is the vague premise for this episode. Way, way back in the early 1990s, when I began my wine journey, I was invited to wine tasting by some coworkers. As a non-wine drinking guy in his late 20s, one of the things I noticed as I got to know other people visiting the wineries, let's call them wine people, is they seemed to be into things I was into. For example, food. Not just talking about food they ate, but cooking, the ingredients, methods, time they spent cooking food, shopping for things to cook, etc. Also, movies. Not so much whatever the hot VCR rental of the moment was, but movies of a certain sort, indie, art house, foreign, specific movies from directors they liked, going deeper than most people I knew at the time discussing things about the movies. And books. These people would talk about books they were reading, which wasn't unusual in and of itself, but again, it seemed to go just a little deeper. I got the feeling that books were more important, more of a priority to my new acquaintances at these wineries, and I really liked that in a sort of aspirational way. My conclusion here is pretty simple. I think people that are more into wine, who might listen to a wine podcast, are more than likely into books as well. Now, tell me if I'm sounding too elitist. Or does this make sense to you, Amy?
It makes complete sense. I think they go together. I would say my book club definitely agrees with that, because the number one reason we get together is actually, I believe, not to read the books, but to connect. And so what that means is for probably the first hour that we're together, we're usually drinking wine and sharing a charcuterie platter. And then we move over and talk about the books. I think that goes together. But, you know, I thought about some other commonalities, and people read for many reasons. I would say they read to learn, to relax, to escape, just like people might unwind like a glass of wine after work. You might read a chapter of a book, and I think it's even better if you do both together.
They are,
you
know, a great combination.
But a couple other things I was thinking about is that all those things, like say cooking, wine, books, and movies, they're super accessible on one level. And if you want, you can do a deep dive. You can get really into it. And then you can spend hours connecting with people. And I find I've met all kinds of people. And another thing, I don't know if you think this is true, but I was thinking about it. Sometimes it's a less vulnerable way of connecting with people. So I find people will argue and debate a character with me. And I feel like I've had this really intense discussion, but maybe I've actually had a bad day, but I feel kind of lighter and more enriched because I shared something with someone. And I love it when people get mad at the characters like they're people. So I don't know if people get mad at the wine or...
I'm trying to think if people get mad at wine. I mean, there are definitely like you search for a specific wine because you've heard certain things about it, or you've had certain wines of this sort, and then you find a different one and it's not as good as you thought it was going to be. You might be mad or disappointed about that. I like where you're going with that. I don't know that I can really relate it to wine, but yeah, I mean, books are great because you're sharing a story that came out of somebody's brain and the people aren't real. I have tasked Amy with coming up with a small list of summer reading for us. We'll get to that in a little bit. But first, thank you for turning me on to a book called Station 11 months back by Emily St. John Mandel. It was really in my wheelhouse. Do you remember what you said about the book? Whatever it was, I went out and found it immediately.
That book is amazing because it was actually written in 2014 and she predicts a pandemic.
It was an avian flu.
It's a flu. Okay.
And yeah, it was much more, of course, severe than COVID-19, the coronavirus, because it wiped out. I mean, they don't really say in the book specifically. It's very, very much a sort of post-apocalyptic dystopian story. And I kind of gravitate to those. I don't know why that is, but I kind of gravitate to those.
Oh, it's amazing.
But in the book, it seems to me like this virus has wiped out probably 95% of the population, which means there's nobody to do any of the jobs that provide us modern comforts. There's no gasoline, so there are no cars. There's no electricity generated, so there's no electricity for lights. Nothing is being manufactured. So everything that these people are using, everything is just stuff they still have
I thought it was very relevant in light of what we've gone through. I obviously, it's a fantasy or worst case scenario. I think the writing is off the hook. I love that. And I have to add, she is Canadian. So I wanted to throw that out
no
there.
No, Canada. She also wrote a couple of other big books. And I think, did you talk about her in general on an episode?
I did a podcast on her most recent book, which is Sea of Tranquility.
And that's a big, big book.
And this is a kind of science fiction where someone kind of keeps appearing in different moments in time. There's a word for that. She likes sci-fi. And there's a future world and there's a far in the past world. It's really, really, really good. When Canada was colonized, they would send wealthy, either second-born sons or sons that were a disappointment, they would send them to Canada and kind of hope that they wouldn't come back. It's about one of those men.
Oh, that's how Canada was built?
Partly, not
the disappointing sons and the second sons. That's really interesting.
I can't remember the name. I'll have to look it up, but it's like a, they're called something men, and okay. They were sent to far-flung places because they needed people to colonize
right
difficult places. Anyway,
those colonialists.
It's an excellent, all of her books. There's another one that's a takeoff on Bernie Madoff. It's called The Glass Hotel. It's also set in British Columbia. I think you'd like that too.
All right. I'm going to become an expert on Emily St. John Mandel, the works of. Okay. Let's talk about how you describe books. I find it really impressive because I listen to your podcasts. And I think there's another common thread here, because when wine people talk about wine, you know, the legit tasting notes full of flowery words and descriptions, people who visit me at the winery say, how do you do that? So Amy, how do you do that?
Well, okay. I was thinking about this and I was comparing it to wine again. Mm-hmm. So I drink wine on the regular, but I'm not confident to say what I think about it. If you ask me, and you're probably going to ask me what I think about the wine I'm drinking, I'll say it kind of quietly or not with confidence. So I think when I talk about books, I sell it. One of the number one things is I have confidence when I describe the books. I think that helps.
Let me ask you this, because this is basically how we create this magical thing called a wine review or a wine tasting note. We have a series of prompts, and it's basically, you know, you can start anywhere you want. It's, you know, you start with the smell, okay, or the color, and there's right. A bunch of different, you know, prompts, like, is it this color? Is it this color? Is it this color? Is it lighter, that color? Is it more medium, that color? Or is it deep, that uh-huh. color? And all of a sudden, you're using the word deep magenta, and then you've already started off with this, like, wow, this wine is deep magenta, and that's a good way to start. And then the aroma, you want to know if it's strong or if it's not so strong. And then you just start pulling things out of it. You know, you can go from the fruits, and then, you know, you start sniffing and people say, I can't get the specific fruits like that. You always say, oh, cherry, oh, blackberry, oh, this. I say, well, then don't worry about what specific fruit it is. Think about what color it is and say it's red fruit, it's blue fruit, it's black fruit. Because I think when you taste something and you say, what color is it? Instead of saying, what fruit do you taste? You're a little more vague. People can latch on to that.
Yeah, I see what you're saying.
And then you start breaking it down. Okay, now we've decided it's red fruit. Is it darker red fruit? Is it heavier red fruit? Or is it lighter red fruit, like a strawberry? Or is it a deep, dark red fruit, like a black cherry or a plum? And you just prompt yourself and you just work your way through. And then you move from fruit and then you go to anything earthy, anything woodsy. And then the one I always forget and miss out on sometimes is floral. Do you smell any flowers in this right. wine? Chances are you will, because wine tends to smell like flowers. That's kind of how it works. So do you do something similar to that when you...
While you're talking, I guess I do a little bit, but not as structured as you said. But I wrote down some adjectives that I use because mm-hmm. I was thinking about it. But I do, first of all, describe the genre to explain it, because... You know, what are we dealing with here? Is it mm-hmm. historical fiction? What is it? And within that, I can have some adjectives. And then I often will compare it to something that you know. Like one of the books I'm going to talk about today, I would compare it to a Quentin Tarantino movie. So I've said mm-hmm. that. And I know right now you probably have somewhat of a thought of what mm-hmm. the book could be like. So I'll try to pick something that everybody knows. And then I just give my kind of reaction. I notice that I will often use the same adjectives, and sometimes it's lazy and sometimes it's good. And one of the words I like is atmospheric.
Okay.
Station 11 is atmospheric.
Very much so. Very, very much so. It's funny that you mentioned Quentin Tarantino. That's very vivid for me. And if you were here in my studio, you would laugh, because on the wall across from where I'm sitting, there are two movie posters framed. One of them is Reservoir Dogs.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
So you do have a series of prompts, but you don't call it that so much. That's sort of what I have, because once you get to the point where you've been using the prompts, you just do that automatically.
Now, I have a question. Is wine, I know there's obviously subjectivity to what you're doing, mm-hmm. but is it pretty objective? Like, if you're trained, could I taste the wine you're drinking and taste floral and you don't? And is that
yes.
those both correct?
It's this is something I always assure people at the winery is wine tasting is a 100% subjective pursuit, just like okay. books. Because you're tasting the wine and smelling the wine with your body, parts of your body. And those parts of your body have been formed over the course of your whole life. How do you know what this smells like? How do you know what that smells like? You might not know what some things smell like that other people do, because they were exposed to those things throughout the course of their life. And an example I always use is my girlfriend, Sabrina. I grew up in the Pacific Northwest, and she grew up in Rio de Janeiro, Brazil. So I'm really good with foresty things. She's really good with tropical fruit. And tropical fruit comes up as sort of a mainstay when you're tasting certain wines, certain categories of wines. Chardonnay is from the same region, for example. If you look through a whole bunch of reviews from those Chardonnays, you're going to see the two words tropical fruit come up all the time. And they might even delve into the actual fruits, you know, pineapple, guava, etc. So I grew up in the Pacific Northwest, and we didn't have a lot of fancy food in my house when I was a kid, but we did have canned pineapple occasionally. So tropical fruit, I understand to be pineapple. I know the smell. So I can swirl that. Somebody says tropical fruit, I'm like, oh yeah, I get that. I get pineapple. Yeah. Swirl it. And if I'm sitting on the couch and Sabrina's with me, I'll say, let's smell this tropical fruit. It's all about pineapple. And she's like, pineapple. Mm-hmm. And there's guava, and there's papaya. And there's mango. She's got them in her head.
Right.
I don't.
Right.
I didn't grow up in Rio de Janeiro.
Right.
So it is, to get back to your original question, no matter how much education you have, no matter how much you think you've exercised your palate and developed your vocabulary as relating to sense memory, which is all this is, it's all about remembering what that is from when you tasted it or smelled it at some point in your entire life. No two people are tasting the exact same wine in the same way, because you're tasting it with your tongue. Your tongue is your tongue, and nobody else's tongue has lived that same life. Now, people in your family might, you know, I've never even thought about this. Do you have brothers and sisters?
I do. I have two older sisters.
So you guys might have similar palates because you grew up in the same house with the same parents, cooking the same food and going to the same places on vacation and smelling various things uniquely to your family and your journey. But still, you're going to have some differences of opinion. You might say, I like this wine. And your sister might say, you're wrong. And of course you're not. But exactly. She might say that, right? Because that's the way sisters are.
Yeah. And I'm the youngest, so.
Oh, okay.
I'm not going to be right.
I'm the middle child of three boys. All right. You anticipated this moment, and it has finally come. The moment on the podcast where I say to my guest, Amy, what's in your glass?
Okay. Before I do this, I'm going to ask a question, and I'm not going to do it if it's going to offend you, but.
I can always edit it out.
I put ice in my wine, and I wasn't going to do it, but I won't do it. But I was just wondering, what are your thoughts on that?
It might offend some people, but it does not offend me. Now, caveat. If you've spent more than $20 or $30 on this bottle of wine, I would say don't do that, because you're altering the flavor.
Okay, I'm not going to do it then.
So you have a wine that's a little more expensive than that, or no?
No, it's like, well, this was $30 Canadian, and I don't know what it would be for you, because it depends. It could also depend on the tax on the wine, because sometimes right. they're fully taxed. I'm going to leave it as is, but okay. Okay, I don't know if I'm pronouncing this correctly, but you asked me to find a book with a wine connection. So
yes,
one of the first books I'm going to talk about has that, and it takes place in Orvieto, Italy.
Very good.
I could not find, at my local wine store, I could not find a wine base there, which I was secretly kind of relieved about because the wine that I was looking for was a sweet white, which I don't like.
This is in the book.
That's in the book. So what I did was I found a wine, if I'm pronouncing it correctly, it's from Lazio, Italy, and it's called Falesco Poggio de Gelsi, and it's a white wine, and it's a little on the drier side.
And you sent me a picture of it last night, and I did a whole bunch of research. So it's from a region called Montefiascone. They actually have, do you have the bottle there? On the front, it just says the name of the wine and the winery and the vintage. And when I looked at that, I thought, okay, there must be a little more to that. So I looked up that wine and it told me where it came from. And it said Montefiascone. And before the word Montefiascone, is there a back label?
There's a label on the back. It's hard to read it because it's clear with the writing on it.
Okay,
but it mentions the wine that I know you're going to talk about, which is what known for. Est.
And the three Ests, one, the first one has one exclamation mark, the second one has two, and the third one has three. And that's actually a part of the region. The proper name of the region is Est Montefiascone.
Okay.
So this is, first of all, this is a blend of three different grapes, Roschetto, Trebbiano, which is one of the most widely planted white wine grapes in all of Italy, and Malvasia. They're grown on rocky soils of Montefiascone. This vineyard is at 400 meters, which is about 1,300 feet, which is fairly high altitude. Now, here are the tasting notes. Prominent green herbal nose. Would you agree?
Oh, gosh.
I'm prompting you, saying, do you get anything herbal? Does it smell a little bit green? Do you smell any green figs? Because this is in the note, green figs, citrus, underripe pear.
I definitely can't tell the pear. It's called a little, if I can use the word sharp, which I like.
Okay.
I feel like
it grabs you a little bit?
Yeah.
Okay. Is it a little bit minerally on the finish?
Okay.
Does it like you just licked a rock or something?
Sure. Yeah. I would never have thought to say that, but yes.
Some of these wine things, you know, when you get down to really parsing them, it's like, why do we even have to go there, you know? And then it says here, it's a versatile white for seafood and vegetables. So now the name, Est, a 12th century bishop traveling to the Vatican to meet the Pope, sent a scout ahead to survey the villages along the route, searching for the best wines. And he was to mark Est, Latin for it is, on the door of the inns where the wine impressed as a guide for the bishop to follow up. At a Montefiascone inn, the scout fell in love with the local wine and wrote Est on the door. And the rest, as they say, is history. The story sort of got bastardized, I guess, at some point, because then there's another story about a 12th century German bishop, John Fugger, traveling to Rome for the coronation of Henry V as the Holy Roman Emperor. And on his travels, Fugger sent his majordomo ahead of him to taste the local wines and report back which wines were vinum est bonum. As with other retellings, the majordomo documented his research by writing est in chalk on the door of the establishments whose wines he enjoyed, and being so impressed with the wines at Montefiascone, punctuated his message with multiple est. The bishop himself was also so impressed with the wines that he canceled the rest of his journey and stayed in Montefiascone until his death. And today there is a tomb in a local church in Montefiascone believed to be the resting place of Bishop Fugger.
Wow. That's a historic vineyard.
That's 900-year-old history right there. Or I guess we could say legend. Because we don't know. We don't know if that's real. But it's kind of fun. That's another reason I love wine. So you like this wine then?
I like it a lot. I like a drier wine. It doesn't have, okay, I don't know if I'm using the right words, but it doesn't have a strong aftertaste to me. Is that
okay? Not strong in a bad way.
Yeah, not in a bad way.
Because when you say the word aftertaste in wine terms, what we're all looking for, us wine people,
is an aftertaste. You probably
are. We don't call it that because aftertaste sounds negative. We call it the finish.
Okay.
When you swallow the wine, what happens in your mouth? Is it a good thing and does it linger?
Oh, I see. Okay. Is that easier? I find that easier with a red wine to tell that. Is that?
Yeah, right? You should have some finish on a white wine, but typically red wines are more complex in general because of the winemaking process. But
I can taste a little, I'm reading, there's a little saline taste and I taste that. So
that's in the notes that I have. Yeah. It gets a little salty.
Yeah, I like that. I think it's good.
Typically when you swallow a wine, two things are going to happen. Your mouth gets drier. And or your mouth waters. Drier means you've just experienced tannins, which is compound in the skins of the grapes that dries your mouth out. And then the mouth watering is from the acidity in the wine. And okay. That's a good thing too, because it balances out the fruit flavor. Because if you just have this fruit and there's no counteracting acidity, then you get a wine that we call flabby.
Yeah, well, I'm happy to discover this. I would.
Amazing, right?
It is interesting.
I will put a picture of Amy's wine on my Instagram. And okay. A picture of Amy sitting in her, what room are you in?
This is our dining room.
I love the wallpaper.
Thanks. I have some funky wallpaper. It's like big circles that I think they're supposed to be kind of flowers, but they're modern.
Oh, it looks a little bit psychedelic to me. Like this could be, you could be sitting in a dining room that was wallpapered in 1968, you know, like yeah. Ooh, yeah. Kind of funky. The hippies came in and remodeled the house.
Yeah.
All right, let's get this list out here. Amy's summer reading recommendations. I am excited for this.
Okay, so I picked three books and I tried to think. All of the books I think are a bit crowd pleasers. When I think of summer reads, I think of a super, super easy book or maybe a longer involved saga.
Okay. That was going to be a question I was going to ask you, like what makes it a summer book, but you just nailed it right there.
Those are two, maybe a thriller. Mm-hmm. This first book that is just clearly meant. So this is The Villa. I'm going to recommend the first one I'm going to recommend is The Villa. And it's clearly like meant for a book club. It's kind of hitting a lot of those sweet spots for, I would say, a female reader. It's called The Villa. It's by Rachel Hawkins, and she's written a few different thrillers, and she wrote a book called The Wife Upstairs. And it's kind of got a lot of things going on, but basically it's two women in their 30s, Emily and Chess, and they've been best friends since they were little girls. Okay. They're now novelists, each of them.
Wow.
One is more successful than the other, and they kind of have lost touch a little bit. I would say they're kind of frenemies.
Oh, and
so
I like this already.
So Emily is kind of not having a good time. She's getting divorced. She's having trouble with her writing. And Chess is very successful, and she comes swooping in. You know that friend that just kind of comes back into town and is just like, hey, let's get together. And
yeah.
Where we left off. And she's like, listen, I've rented this villa for 6 weeks, and she's very successful in Italy. And we're going to go there. We're going to drink wine and read books. Not kidding. And escape. Let's go. And she's like, awesome. I want to get out of my life. Let's go. So they go. And it's a villa in Orvieto. Mm-hmm. And there is a little paragraph I could read about the wine itself.
Oh, please do. Let's hear it.
Okay, so they kind of get there, and when they get there, they start to tour the villa, but they really want to get to eating and drinking and hanging out. So they start to make dinner, and they say, we feast on the asparagus cooked with lemon and olive oil, and the chicken and potatoes, the gravy, somehow rich and vibrant all at once, all of it washed down with cold glasses of the Orvieto wine the region is famous for. It's sweeter than I normally drink, but it tastes like summer. And by the time I get up from the table, I'm fuller than I've been in ages and also more than a little tipsy. The wine is sort of setting that scene.
Yeah.
What happens, there's a couple of other storylines. So while they're there, they start to uncover a mystery. The Rolling Stones, I think in the 60s, 70s, recorded an album in Europe at a villa. And so they're kind of recreating, it's not the Rolling Stones, but there has been a murder many years ago from a rock band visiting this villa. Mm. So they start to uncover a mystery. That's the thriller part. And then it's got, and that storyline, so they kind of alternate voices in different points of view. That was inspired by, did you watch Daisy Jones and the Six on television? Or you might have read the book.
No, I don't even know who that is.
Okay. So it's a book and it's inspired by Fleetwood Mac, and it's a big hot book and a big show. And so it's basically about kind of groovy 1970s rock and roll.
Okay.
So that storyline going on where they're investigating this murder of these young people kind of overtaking this mansion in the 70s, partying and recording an album. And then the last storyline is Frankenstein, the book, came about, that whole story, because a bunch of Percy Shelley and Mary Shelley ended up at a villa, kind of like this villa.
Mm.
So all these people have those names. So there's kind of all these things happening. And then also, funny enough, although I don't know this lands, there's some podcasters in there and a separate storyline that are also investigating this murder. But I think they're there just because podcasting is trendy.
Right. So. And true crime is huge.
And true crime is huge. So this book, I would give it 4 stars. It's not 5, but I think it's one of those books that you take on a beach, preferably with a glass of wine, and you really enjoy it. You escape. But I don't think, for me, it didn't stay with me forever, but that's kind of what I want in a summer read.
Sure.
For a summer read, I don't want to be taxed. I want to just kind of have some fun.
So you want to enjoy it in the moment.
Yeah.
Okay. What's next?
The next one is...
I'm going to put the names of all these books and the authors in the show notes. So if you scroll down the show notes from this episode, as you're listening, if you're driving, don't do that right now.
Okay. The next one is a lot of fun. It's called Age of Vice. And here's the cover. You can see it. It's for people listening. It's a black cover with just bright gold letters.
And hold it up again. I like that. I want to get a picture. Perfect. Bam.
This is a crime thriller set in India. It's by a young author. Her name is Deepti Kapoor. And this book is long.
It looks a little thick. Yeah. You're holding up a thick book there. How many pages?
It's
600,
550, but it is a page turner. It's not hard to read.
Okay.
It's a book about gangsters, lovers, false friendships, forbidden romance, and corruption. And this is the book that is sort of this Quentin Tarantino style.
Oh, okay.
Book. I think what people like about it is it's set in India, and it gets into, you know, there's a strong class system in India, and it kind of looks at everything from the deep poverty to crime families, wealthy people. There's a lot going on. The book is about the Wadia crime family. There's a servant who kind of comes from super humble beginnings, but is somehow caught up in all this.
Mm-hmm.
There's the son who's kind of, his name's Sunny. He's a playboy. He's trying to outdo his father, but he's kind of just not doing anything and just partying.
They don't send him to Canada.
Yeah, they might send him to Canada. That's right. Good. That's a good one. And then there's Nita, who's a curious journalist, and she is falling in love with Sunny, and she's kind of caught between reporting the truth of the story and then her love for him. And it starts off with, I guess I would say, just to tell you what it starts off with, there's a speeding Mercedes jumps a curb and 5 people die. This is page one.
Wow.
And it's a rich man's car, but the rich man isn't there and the servant is there.
Oh.
So that's how it starts. And it's
unfortunate.
Just, what I liked about it is it's the author's young, so it's a very fresh book. It moves quickly. It's pretty violent, so I found that difficult, but everyone I've talked to liked it. And I think this would also appeal to men, women, all kinds of people.
Okay. All right. You have one more for us.
The last one is called Yellow Face by R.F. Huang, and it is my favorite book that I've read this year.
Oh, hold it up. Do you have it there?
Oh, I don't have it because I lent it out.
It's all right. Just send me a picture of it, okay?
I'll send you a picture.
I got to have all these things for the Instagram post.
It deals with diversity, racism, cultural appropriation. Also, at the heart of it, it's a lot about the bad things that can happen on social media. On Twitter and that kind of thing. And basically it's 2 women, young women who went to Yale, and they're rising novelists. So this is another novelist theme. One of them is Asian, one of them isn't. And then there's a bad accident, and the Asian woman, her name's Athena, she dies And she's an incredible writer. Like, she's a rising star. And in a very quick moment, her supposed friend steals her manuscript for a book and passes it off as her own. So that's the setup.
Okay. And now that's a device that's been used a bunch of times, right?
You know what? You're right about that. In fact, two books that just came out that were very good. There's a book called The Plot by Jean Hamp Horlitz, and that's about the same thing. And then there's a book called Who is Maud Dixon by Alexandra Andrews, and it does the same. But I think why I like this book is, first of all, the author's super young, so I almost can't quantify the writing. It's just, she's like 26 or 27, and she's just doing something really fresh and new.
It's like a different language.
Yes, it's like a different language. She talks about racism. She herself is Asian, and you'll be uncomfortable at moments. You learn a lot. Like, it's, she's just talking about tropes, and it's a thriller, and the writing's good. So I just couldn't put it down. I thought it was really good, really creative and new.
Very nice.
Yeah.
Very, very nice. I'm starting to get a little sweaty thinking about that book. How do you choose which books to read and end up on your podcast? Where's a great place to read about books?
When I start, I read what I naturally like, just that if I wasn't doing the podcast, because I feel that people will hear the authenticity in my voice if I really like it.
And of course.
And I like thrillers. I like literary fiction, historical fiction, memoirs, but that can be a little limiting. I can't do everything on that. So I bring on people with different viewpoints, and I'll bring on friends or authors themselves to talk so I can try new things and learn. Where do I find books? New York Times, for sure.
Okay. All right.
I speak to my friends. There's a blog in Canada called 49th Shelf, which I learn about new Canadian authors.
All right.
And I would say that staff shelf of any really great indie bookstore.
Right.
You can look this at the staff picks. And what you're looking for is, at any given time, the more I do this, there's only kind of like 20 books maximum at a time in the world that people, or not maybe in North America, that are getting touted. And there's so many great books.
Yeah.
If you go to a really great independent store, you might find something, stumble across something that you wouldn't. So
this is your chance to give a shout out to your local independent bookstore.
Oh, okay. I'm going to give a shout out to Hager Books. It's in my neighborhood.
Hager Books?
Yeah.
In Vancouver?
In Vancouver.
What neighborhood are you in?
I'm in a neighborhood called Kerrisdale.
I just subscribed to a cool bookish newsletter called The Millions. I really don't know where it comes from.
I don't know about that.
Someone mentioned it on a podcast, and I subscribed, and I like it so far. When I have time to read it, sometimes it just comes. It drops in my mailbox, and I'm like, okay, I'll just keep that there. And then there's like 2 or 3 weeks worth. But it's called The Millions. I'm sure it's based in New York City somewhere. The New Yorker, for me, is also a good source of book reviews and long stories about authors. Here where I live in Marin County, California, there's a bookstore called Book Passage. And if there's an author making his way into the Bay Area, oftentimes they will show up at Book Passage. It's actually just a 15-minute drive from my house.
Nice.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's Marin County is a little bit she in that way, for sure. And there's a local chain here called Copperfields that has a few locations. And one is just a few minutes drive from my house.
Sometimes those bookstores, those really good ones, have great Instagrams or newsletters.
Oh, totally.
And you can get good ideas. Because I say that indie bookstores are great because they're usually staffed with people that read a lot.
And it's really, it feels good to go into a bookstore and talk to people that like books.
Totally.
Are you ready to find out what's in my glass?
Yes. All I know is it's red. So
it is red because I've been swirling it.
What is
red wine? Well, you have Italian wine in your glass, so I decided to put Italian wine in my glass.
Okay.
The wine I am currently sipping is a fairly inexpensive red, and I'm loving it. I'm like sucking it down while we're talking. But if we don't finish the interview, then that's the reason. Mike just got drunk. This is a winery that I've had wine from before, but I've never had this particular wine because this is sort of their starter red blend. The winery is called Monte Peloso, and the wine is called Aquo. That's A space Q-U-O. This is based on the Latin. Depending on what website you look at, it sort of means where we begin. And this is sort of their entry level red wine, 2017 vintage. Montepulciano is on the coast of Tuscany in an area called Bulgari, which is one of the hottest areas in Tuscany. So they grow a lot of the darker, thicker skin grapes. And the winemaker is a Swiss guy named Fabio Cirellotto. And he says it's easy to produce these wines because they're so concentrated because we live in such a hot climate. What is hard is to achieve elegance and finesse. He's already admitting, like, I've got the good fruit and I could just make the wine and it would be amazing, but I'm going to make it even better than that. And it's true. I've had three or four of the wines that they produce from just 17 acres. So this is a small, small winery. Oh, they make some higher end stuff. They've got one called Nardo, which is a Tuscan dialect word for lavender. They make a wine called Gabbro, which is 100% Cabernet Sauvignon. And then Anio, which is their red blend that's a little bit more expensive than the Acquo that I am drinking. It's a blend of 30% Montepulciano, 30% Cabernet Sauvignon, 20% Sangiovese, 10% Marsillan, and 10% Alicante. That's five grapes. Four of them are Italian grapes. One of them is a French Bordeaux grape. The very basic way you would describe this wine is it's a super Tuscan, which means they're using the Tuscan grapes, but they're adding something different in there to make it a little more impressive. The Cabernet Sauvignon. This wine is great. It retails for like $25.
What would you serve that with, or how would you, I mean, you're drinking it here, but what kind of food would
well,
you?
Well, right now I'm drinking it all by itself. On an empty stomach. Anything of that kind of rustic Mediterranean thing, you know, seared meats, seared vegetables. It's summertime, so you fire up the grill and you get some veggies on there and you put some, maybe some Italian sausages on there, maybe some steaks. Keep it simple. This is one of those wines that doesn't need a lot of adornment around it with food because it really, the flavors are very bright. They really pop. And I mentioned lavender in the name of one of the wines. It's not this one, but there's definitely a good hit of something very floral, lavendery on the nose. And then it gets into all the red fruits, all the different cherries and raspberries and blackberries. So it's darker red fruits.
Sounds really good.
Mm. I wish you were here because it's one of those. I'm in the house by myself right now. Like, I wish there was somebody here to share with me.
Yeah, it sounds really good.
And then it gets really juicy in the mouth. You just taste it, and then all of a sudden your mouth just starts to water. And it's like you just bit into that whole cluster of grapes. And like, I almost like you can feel the juice running down your chin. You know, I have some listeners up in Vancouver.
You do?
I get the download stats from my podcast host site.
Oh, that's fun.
And it says that I have some Vancouver listeners. Maybe you're one of them. I don't know.
I am one of them.
The funny thing about the statistics we get as podcasters is just vague locations where the listens are coming from, not who these people are really. I do have a great friend up your way, my friend Sam, who's a geologist. She may be tuning in, but I do get downloads from BC. Yeah. Let's talk about starting a podcast. I think we started around the same time, give or take a few months. Tell me what prompted you to start a podcast.
Well, I'd never heard a podcast until COVID hit. Mm-hmm. And one thing in Canada, we had super strict rules, like more than the United States. And we really couldn't even at one point barely leave the house. Mm. And so I'm home and I discovered podcasts and they became how I got through COVID. And I was so interested in the intimacy of it. Mm-hmm. I have a journalism background. I like that you could find something very specific, like so specific.
Yeah.
And it would do a deep dive. And I thought it seemed like the person was, if they're done really well, that they're talking directly to me. I just challenged myself that following January, so January 2021, really just to do something creative and use skills in a different way. My main goal was to do a podcast. It wasn't to do books, but I chose books because it's something that I know, because I wanted it to seem authentic. Like,
what was your second choice?
Oh God. It would probably be knitting and you would not be. We probably wouldn't have met. So I just thought there's a couple of things I can talk about knowledgeably. And I thought I just did it for fun and I didn't have an agenda with it. And it just kind of kept going. And I got some followers. I really like it. Yeah. I don't know. What about you? When did you start it and why?
January of 2021.
The same.
Yeah. Just like you, I didn't know anything about podcasts. I'd heard about them. They were out there bouncing around because I come from the world of radio. Okay. So I worked in radio for 15 years up until about the latter part of the 1990s at the apex of the Dave Matthews sensation. And I got out of the business because it just wasn't fun anymore. And I stumbled into restaurant work by accident. And that worked with my love of wine, which I had already had. I already had love of wine, radio career, which means now I can talk about wine like somebody who knows what they're talking about, because that's what radio is. Come up with a soundbite.
Well, it's a natural progression for you. Like, it's just so easy that with that.
Right.
Radio.
The radio thing stayed dormant in me, though, from 1998 until the latter 20 teens when podcasts came around. And I'm like, oh, they're creating little shows. I could create a little show. Okay. And so I thought about it for a long time. And then I got an email, you know, from just some thing relating to podcasts. And there was this host site that I use now that was all about, look at our videos. This is how you start a podcast. And I'm like, okay, well, how does it work?
That's Buzzsprout, because you use Buzzsprout too.
I use Buzzsprout, yeah, and they're so helpful.
They are, actually.
So I started looking at these videos, then I got an account, and I thought, okay, I got an account now. I just need to do it. So I did it. I talked to my boss. I said, hey, I'm thinking of starting a wine podcast. I want you to be my first guest. So he sat for an interview, and my boss is a guy from India. I don't know if you met him when you were at the winery, Deepak. Okay. He's a guy from India who's making wine in Sonoma, California. And the story, how he got from point A to point B, is just lots of twists and turns. And I think that's really a fun thing about a lot of us in the wine business, because none of us grew up as kids, people saying, what do you want to be when you grow up? And you're like, I want to work in a winery. I find it's a great form of storytelling, and it's very autobiographical, and it can be very relatable, because most of us, who we are today is not who we thought we were going to be when we were little kids.
No.
And so I figured out how the technical thing worked, and then I started the podcast. But yeah, I was like a podcast host waiting to happen. Somebody just had to light the fuse.
I think here I am. Me too, but a little bit different. It was interesting because when we first talked, after we first met, and what I realized, you are in it. You really want to connect and hear about people's individual stories. Mm-hmm. And for me, I was kind of had that journalist hat, is I want to provide information.
Right.
But also be creative. I think we meet somewhere in the middle with wanting to be creative and have fun. But I really appreciate that about you, that you were like, I just want to like connect and get to know the why behind people.
And I want to put on a show.
Yes, exactly.
Mine is more about, it's a show. You know, it starts with like a little bit of, here's a preview. Here's some clips. Here's music. Totally. Bam, bam, bam. And then here's Mike. Hey, because I like to put on a show when I'm done with all the editing and I upload it and schedule the release. I feel like I'm unveiling a new painting.
Yeah.
And it's really, it's a great feeling. What's the oddest or funniest or strangest thing that's happened to you while you were recording your podcast?
Well, this won't surprise you because you have experience in radio, but one of the problems I had when I started, I used to write out my script. Mm-hmm. Well, that doesn't work. But what I didn't understand is what people are really looking for within reason is the mistakes. Mm-hmm. Because then you become human. I had my dog barged in. Someone was knocking on the door. I couldn't get recording started. I kept that in. But the biggest thing that happened was I had a friend on who's a sci-fi nerd. Mm-hmm. And I have no interest in sci-fi. And then I kind of made him read something that I thought might have appealed to my listeners. And we both didn't like the book. And I refused to finish the book. I couldn't sleep because I was like, well, no one's going to want to listen. And I let everybody down. It was one of my biggest episodes because I just went on and I was like, I don't like this book at all. In fact, I didn't finish it.
It's because you were real. You let the real Amy be seen by your audience.
And people really liked it. And I literally thought, oh my God, I'm going to lose listeners. That was a really big turning point for me because it allowed me to kind of relax a bit and realize that I don't have to tell everybody everything. And really what I am is I'm an ambassador for reading. I want to get people excited. They don't have to know everything. And they do want to connect. They want to know what's going on in your life within reason.
They totally do.
Yeah. So anyway, that was... I would say not finishing a book and then going on and talking about it and complaining about it.
Well, it's just like when I have a wine, I open a wine, like I try and bring wines onto the show that have some kind of a story.
Yeah.
And they're fun to talk about, like your wine, like my wine today. And I've done this before where, you know, I've had a guest sitting with me in the studio we put together up at the winery when we do it live and in person. We're like, well, this isn't great. You know, we're all amped to really get into this wine, and then you open it, it's like, yeah, it doesn't really work. And it's real. You know, it's not like when you turn on, say, you know, Good Morning America or whatever, and they're doing this thing and everything is, yeah, this is amazing. This is a great thing, and it's amazing, and it's amazing, and it's great, and we all love it. And who? They never say, yeah, this isn't what we thought it was going to be.
No.
Because that's the real experience, you know. You go out shopping for something, or you find a recipe for something you want to cook, and you follow it to the letter, and then you taste it and you're like, yeah, let's get a pizza. That was kind of your moment. Let's get a pizza.
Yeah.
I didn't like this book. Let's just get a pizza book. Your podcast is the Red Fern Book Review. I know you named it for a favorite book, Where the Red Fern Grows, which I've never read. And I know it was a movie in the 1970s and it was remade in the early 2000s. I still remember, like, vaguely being in a movie theater as a kid, seeing a preview for Where the Red Fern Grows, and looking back on me, like, whatever it was, 10-year-old me at the time, there was a feeling in the pit of my stomach watching that trailer, like, oh, that's going to be fucking sad.
It is sad.
Yeah. So I never saw Where the Red Fern Grows, but you named your podcast after it. Tell me why.
It was probably one of the first chapter books I read. It was written in 1961. It's about a young boy in the Ozarks with two they're called Red Bone Coonhounds. They're right. Hunting dogs.
Yeah.
Big Dan, Little Ann, and it was set in the Ozarks. And basically, spoiler alert, the dogs die in the end.
Yeah, you just know.
You gotta know.
You just know.
They're gonna, like, when the dogs.
And it's gonna rip your heart out.
I didn't know that was gonna happen.
And it's for kids.
And I got so attached to the dogs. Oh my God. There's this, like, very heartwarming ending. There's, like, a parable throughout about a red fern, and it ends up sprouting out through one of their graves when they're, and I think I cried for like a week. And what I think the point is, I don't know now how good or bad it was. It really was the first time I understood that books have that kind of power.
Right. Totally.
And that's why.
That's a great lesson. But me, I'm just like, no, I'm out. It's going to,
yeah. No, it was very sad. And I had no idea.
This is going to get really sad. I am not here for it.
Yeah.
Have you guested it on many podcasts, Amy?
No, this is the first time. And it's
what?
It's so much fun. And it's hard. Like, it's getting easier now, but, like, it's hard to be asked the questions. Like, I like asking the questions.
Oh.
Answering the questions is harder. So it's really good for me to understand when I have guests how they might feel. It's
sure. Good. No, this is good. This is a good, like a turnabout kind of thing.
Yeah.
But I'm a pretty easy inquisitor. I mean, I'm not like, you know, I'm not Mike Wallace from 60 Minutes.
No, you're not.
Are there other podcasts you listen to that you might recommend?
There's two that I'm really into right now. One is called Wiser Than Me. And it's...
Oh, this is... Julia Louis-Dreyfus. Julia Louis-Dreyfus, right. Somebody mentioned that to me.
So she's interviewing older women and finding their relevance, and big name women like Jane Fonda,
right.
Amy Tan. And she's also hilarious. Like, so she interviews Ina Garten, and halfway through, she's like, can I ask you about that chicken recipe? Could I do this? Like, she gets... It's just so funny. Like, she just... It is very good. These women talk about their past and what made them who they are. And I think it's great. And it's funny. The other one that I'm super into is called Dear Therapists, with two therapists, Lori Gottlieb and Guy Winch. And that someone comes on, writes them a letter and has a serious problem, and they help solve it. And it's actually really, really helpful. So if you don't go to therapy, this is a free therapy.
Okay. That's cool.
But it's also entertaining.
I heard an ad. I was listening to a podcast the other day, and you know, when a podcast from like a celebrity or a well-known podcast, there's ads, and there's usually ads for other podcasts. And I'm usually, if I'm in the car, you know, I can't quite reach the phone, and I shouldn't look at the phone when I'm driving anyway. So But I try and, you know, skim through the ads, but I couldn't skim through the ad because I was, you know, driving and it was a lot of traffic. All of a sudden this ad comes on for a books podcast. And I'm like, oh, it's a book podcast. Cool. I can talk to Amy about this. It was a podcast called Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books. Have you heard of this?
I think she might be the biggest podcast in my space.
Oh, you know what? I hated the ad. The woman's name is Zibby Owens.
Yeah, it's a lot.
But she's a mom, four kids, but she has this, yeah, this voice. I'm a mom, and we moms don't have time to read books. And it's kind of this cartoony mom persona that she puts on. And I'm like, talk to me like I'm a real person. Don't talk to me like I'm a childish adult. Or I don't even know what she's going for, but I just,
well, my she started,
God.
The year, I want to say she started like a long time ago in like 2016, 2018. What she does is her whole thing is it's super short and sweet. Mm-hmm. She brings on an author and she brings on all the best authors. They all go see her, whatever the latest book is. Mm-hmm. And it's short, like it's 30 minutes or less. She's got tons of energy. It's super accessible, but I like something more nuanced personally.
I just felt like it was, here's a big smear of very sweet, overly sweet, sickening jam. Please enjoy.
I think for the average reader, people will like it because they get an interview with the author. But for me, I want something a little more, I think personally as a listener, I want something a little more subtle.
I just hated the whole idea of her podcast. And then I Googled her.
Oh, she's a big deal.
Yeah. I found out she's a big deal. But you know what? She's also the daughter of a billionaire.
Yeah, that's true. That doesn't count. That doesn't hurt.
There's another reason to think. Sure, Zibby.
Yeah.
Sure. Last question. Where do you read mostly? What are the perfect conditions for you? And is there a dangerous looking stack of books there right now? I'm thinking about my bedside table.
I have books everywhere in the house, but okay. I would say I have kids that are grown. I have two boys, but I still am a morning person, and I did it because it was when no one was around. Mm-hmm. I like to get up early and I read in a nook off the kitchen for probably about an hour. And I like it because nobody's around bugging me. Mm-hmm. And then I'm free to be bugged when they're up, if they're home or if my husband's home. But one of my biggest problems is I put a lot of books on hold at the library. Mm-hmm. And so I feel under artificial pressure to finish. Like I could just pay the dollar or I could just turn it back in, but I'm like, no, I have to read because I have to get it back in time.
Right. Well, that's good that you're patronizing the library though. That's an important thing. So you're not
a little. I mean,
buying all these books.
Yeah.
I read in bed. I try and read during the day, but I just find that I've got other things I want to do when I have spare time. So it's hard for me. I'm probably down to reading one or two books a year. Mm-hmm. I hate to admit that to somebody who hosts a books podcast.
You know what, though? It is so hard. Like, it's hard to fit it in, and you've got so many options now. And the truth is, I would read a lot, but I wouldn't read as much as I do. I'd probably read half as much as I do. I do because I'm doing this podcast.
You think having a podcast gives you an excuse to read more books?
Yeah.
I'm going to use that for drinking more wine. Yeah. This is for the podcast. It's just slippery, research. It's just research.
Slippery slope.
Yes, it totally is. Hey, thanks for hanging out with us.
That was really fun. Thank you so much for having me on. And I learned a lot too. And now you've made me more confident to like use wine adjectives.
Good.
Drinking wine.
Yeah. Hang on. I'm going to read the closing credits. Okay.
Okay.
The Tall Mike Wine Podcast was conceived and is written, produced, edited, and maintained by yours truly. Today's episode came to you from my home studio in Novato, California. I'd love to hear from you if you have a question, a comment, a suggestion, or a guest, or a topic, or if you want to have your very own stack of official Tall Mike Wine Podcast coasters. I didn't show you the coasters, Amy. Did I give you one when you came to visit?
You did.
Oh, you have one.
I have one.
Okay, good.
Thank you. It's a nice coaster.
It is a nice coaster. And if you would like to have your own, you can email me at tallmikewine@gmail.com to see behind the scenes of today's episode and to follow along as I drink wine and cook and eat delicious food and otherwise live the good life. Follow me on Instagram at Tall Mike Wine. Did you drop that 5-star review yet on Apple Podcasts? Come on, what's the holdup? They tell me it helps a lot. Thanks to Amy Mayer for hanging out. I'll have another episode for you soon, but for now, I'm Mike Stone. Keep swirling, keep sniffing, keep sipping. Cheers.